I am sitting with Dr. Solomon Burke. One of the men with one blessed with one of the finest voices ever to hit rhythm and blues, blues and soul. And I got a lot of questions to ask you here, man. And I'd just like you to just talk and feel good about it. I appreciate you coming down here.
It was an honor. Anything with you and for you, you know that. How you doing? Good to see you again.
I'd like to know about your early life. At home, in Philadelphia. I'd like to know some things that that people have never written. A lot hasn't been written about you. But I can't seem to find much about your real early life and what you did.
Well, right now, they're in the my kids are in the midst of writing the story of my life, so it's going to be pretty exciting, I guess, for them, as well as for me. That's right now, that's what they're really doing. They're going back to the basics and the roots, you know, from the time that I was born, and all the way back to West Philadelphia, you know, the Black Bottom, and all of the beautiful things that happened, the great things, the strange things, the wonderful things, the unique things, the powerful things, the tragedies, the sadness, the love, the tears, the joy.
Tell me about your mother.
Mother?
Yeah.
Wonderful. Wonderful mom. Great dad. A lot of different experiences. You really got to read that book.
I'll read the book.
You really got to read that book, John. I'm going to see that you get one first. But it's a long story. It's a very long, long story. And it's something that I haven't always talked a lot about.
Yeah.
You know, because I felt it really wasn't of interest to people to know what my mom and dad and all those things did or doing.
They must have influenced you. You know, they must have been.
The big influence came from my grandmother. My mother was a school teacher. My dad was like Jew and practiced his Judaism and spoke Hebrew. My grandmother was Ethiopian and East Indian. So it's a very interesting combination. A lot of our friends are Portuguese, so, and we lived in a great community, and we had just a lot of wonderful people, a lot of wonderful family, a lot of wonderful relatives, and from the South Carolina, the North Carolina, you know, your roots come from all those areas, from Louisiana. We had just a wealth of family at that time, and unfortunately, that family is all evaporated. It all went back to the dust.
That's where we all go, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, your early life in Philadelphia, I understand that you were involved heavily in the church.
No, I was born in a church. Born in a church.
Can you tell us about the church?
Sure. I mean, the church is my life. And it's always been my life. I was born in a church. I was born upstairs while the church was going on. I was the only kid that never heard cry because the trombones and the tubas. So I hope I cried in key.
Knowing you, you did.
I hope so. But that's been my life, and that's one of the functions that happen for me spiritually, mentally, and physically that keep me on the edge of doing the things that I do, and by the gifts of God and the grace of God, I'm able to continue when everything else fails, because I know that Jesus never fails and the Word of God stands. And if I stand on that and believe and trust in that, come hell or high water, storm or rain, I'll prevail. And that's the way I look at it. And I try to teach my children and my children's children that, and the members of our congregation and anybody else that I can when I can.
Yeah.
I don't believe in heavy influence. I say, let your light so shine that men may see your work and glorify your Father which is in heaven. And then they'll follow those steps. If they see you prosper, they'll do what you do.
Absolutely.
Like if a man sees a line with 100 people in line for a lottery ticket, even if he doesn't play, he says, I'm going to chance it today and play one. Because that line looks good. So I try to keep a line going, see?
Yeah.
It's very important.
So you virtually grew up in the church.
Basically, that's when we grew up in church in West Philadelphia.
And you were given a title, a young preacher.
Well, I was a wonder boy preacher, is what they called me, I guess. And I don't know why they wondered.
Well, they must have had some reason.
No, it was a beautiful experience at that time, and it was an oddity.
Someone else came out of Philadelphia. Wasn't Daddy Grace?
Daddy Grace didn't really come out of Philadelphia. He came out of Massachusetts.
Yeah.
But one of his bases was there. The Father Divine headquarters Father Divine. In Philadelphia.
Right.
And all that was in my era. See, that was when I was a child. When I spoke as a child and lived as a spiritual child amongst those leaders.
Oh.
And I had a cousin who was named Prophet Jones out of Detroit. And I had another cousin, his name was High John the Conqueror. So I met exciting relatives.
Any other of your relatives in the music business?
I'm sure I have thousands of relatives in the music business that I don't know of.
Yeah.
And every chance I get, you know, I learn about more and more. The internet is enlightening me to relatives I never knew I had. And every time we play different countries and different places, we find that we have relatives and things. I don't have anybody that I can just say, you know, superstar. You know, I'd like to claim Ray Charles as my uncle, but I can't. You know, I love him that much. But I don't have any musical relatives like that, except for my children and my grandchildren.
Yeah. Well, your first music that I understand, and this is when I hadn't seen you for a long time, and you came up to Cashbox magazine to see George Albert.
Oh, it's the man.
And George Albert had something to do with Apollo Records.
An awful lot.
Yeah, and you were on Apollo Records.
That was the first record company that signed me. Bess Berman signed me on the night of a concert. A religious concert at Williams Chapel Baptist Church in Philadelphia. And a young lady by the name of Viola Williams invited me to come to that program with my group. And my group just didn't want to go because there was no money involved. You know, they just said, man, we've been singing all over town for $3 and $10, $5 and $14 and split up between nine guys. They said, we're not going to make this one. You know, it's a Friday night. And I never forget my bass player's mother had a television. That was a big deal. And nobody had a television. And she had a little teeny round television with a big, thick piece of glass over top of it with three colors, paper over it. And they was all excited about going to see this television in her house. So nobody wanted to go to the program. So I wind up getting ready to go to the program, and my clothes is in the cleaners. So I missed the cleaners by like 5 minutes. The cleaners was closed. The program started at 8 o'clock. So after walking to the cleaners, couldn't get my clothes out of the cleaners. I had to go back home and borrow my uncle's pants, my cousin's shoes, and my father's jacket. And I snuck on out to the concert. Then I didn't have no guitar because my guitar was over at my group's house. Man, I'm really messed up. You know, but I didn't want to disappoint this lady after my group didn't show up. I didn't want to disappoint her because her husband was a very big disc jockey. And I figured, well, maybe she could get us on the radio, you know, sing on the radio or something. Yeah. You know, I don't want to disappoint her. So I showed up and she said, Where's your group? I'm going to try to get you in doing an intermission to sing a song. I said, well, my group couldn't make it tonight. She said, well, can you do something? I said, yes, ma'am. I said, I need to borrow a guitar. So I borrowed a guitar from the Dixie Hummingbirds.
Oh, Dixie Hummingbird.
Well, I had a good guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Was in tune.
Excellent.
And I sung the Old Ship of Zion. And the rest is history.
Man.
The rest is history. I mean, I just let the Lord lead me by the Spirit of the Lord. And then I tuned the guitar up in Vassapool.
When did you learn to play the guitar?
I was playing. My grandmother kind of taught me how to bar it,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the Vassapools in town when I was like 7 years old. And
Bo Diddley did it that way, too.
Yeah, yeah. It's fun. It's fun. A lot of fun that way. is chords, like a straight harmony chord.
Yes.
And so I hit my chords and
got out there and did it.
Then I just went on into the old ship of Zion and singing, and I was just praying and singing and asking the Lord, you know, Lord, you take me through that. I knew my pants was falling down because they kept slipping, and I kept pulling them up with the guitar chord. You know, I said, Lord, you help me. I guess I was the first one doing that Michael Jackson thing, you know.
How old were you when?
Oh, I was 14 years old.
14 years old. How long were you on Apollo?
Apollo for 6 years.
6 years.
6 years. Six
and that's when you met George.
Well, I never met him at that time. I met him in the later years.
Yeah.
But Mrs. Berman was at the concert that night.
Mm-hmm.
And she ran over to me and she said, he's mine, he's mine. And this other guy named Jimmy Brackett, he came up and says, no, I want him. And yes, we're going to order something. Okay?
Sure.
You got to order.
A break here.
Okay.
All right. We're back.
I'm trying to stay on this diet, and I got a...
You look like you lost some weight.
A few ounces, you know. You take your teeth, you got to lose weight.
I'm going to ask you now about your early influences as far as blues, and as my listeners are really involved in blues and R&B.
Well, my early influences in the blues were... Ray Charles, of course. Wyoming Blues Harris.
Oh, yeah.
Jimmy Rushing. Jimmy Reed.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if everybody remembers these names.
Oh, of course they do.
And
be surprised.
It was strange because my family listened to a lot of music.
Yeah.
I loved Paul Robeson, who didn't sing the blues.
No.
But who was a great singer, and I really idolized him, Marian Anderson, and Nat King Cole, Gene Autry, and Perry Como.
If you mentioned Gene Autry, because you were actually the forerunner of the mixture of country.
Yes.
And soul.
Yes.
You did it before Ray Charles.
Yes, and Gene Autry was the reason for me doing it. Because I've always just idolized him. To me, he's always been my idol.
Yeah.
As a kid, you know, when the first Admiral TV came in, and we had one, and I would come home, and I never forget. He says, "I'm back in the saddle again." God, can sing that song, you know.
That's right.
And the signature of that song was just so great. You know, left a great influence on me, you know. And I loved Gene Autry singing it. And then Christmas time, he sang Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I recorded it in my new Christmas album. It comes out this year, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
You're kidding, really?
Yeah. I was so excited about it because I've always wanted to sing that song. You know, I just love Gene Autry singing that song.
Well, you
when I tell people that they crack up. We thank you for the food that you're about to receive. Bless us and keep us and protect us, bless our loved ones. May this food nourish our body. Christ's sake, save the name.
Amen. Now, something a lot of people don't do anymore. You know that?
Grace?
Yeah.
You gotta go with grace.
Yeah. A lot of people don't do it anymore.
Keep it.
Every day I have to thank God for being alive.
Tell me about it. Every minute.
Yeah.
In this world.
In this world. So, what records, what songs? Can you remember any particular
songs? Tears. Oh, there's another guy I like too. But I got a chance to perform with him, and he got mad at me. Amos Wilbur.
Oh, yeah.
One scotch, one bourbon,
one beer.
I didn't drink, but I thought it was great, and somebody had to drink all that. It was really... must be really a fantastic night, Wilbur.
Well, John Lee did that, too. Who wrote that, Amos?
I think so. I don't know. I really not sure.
I have to look that up. I'll put that out on the internet and find out immediately. And you... your original producer at Atlantic the second label you were on?
Atlantic was actually the third label of it.
What was the second label you were on?
Singular Records.
Singular.
Out of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Babe Shibby and an Artie Singer. And went from there to Atlantic.
Okay. Your producer at Atlantic was?
Jerry Wexler.
The man.
Jerry Wexler. Jerry Wexler. One of the greats.
Absolutely. The real music man.
International genius. Mathematically, physically, musically.
And a mensch.
Yeah.
Jerry paired you with Burt Burns.
Yes, he did.
And he says in his book, Jerry's book, that you guys had two totally different personalities.
I love Burt, though.
Could you run that by us?
Well, Burt wrote the song called Cry to Me, for me, very slow, and I couldn't hear it. He sang it to me about 15 times. He played it on the piano. So I can't hear it. I tried to sing it, didn't work. So now I turned around and I said, well, Mr. Wexler said, well, you got to do this song, man. I mean, this is a hit song. I said, well, I'd like to do it, but I can't do it that way. So then they actually got angry with me and said, okay, how do you want to do it? So I got the musicians together and I said, this is the way we want to do it. And I took the tempo up and said, dun, dun, dun. They were all angry with me, but we did it. We became a hit.
That's right.
So then my next little problem with Bert, which I love this guy, I got him married.
Eileen?
Yeah, I introduced him to his wife. When I first met him, he only had a dog named Dino. And he named his publishing company after the dog. And he had this big old dog, Great Dane dog. And he was so in love with his secretary. I said, man, you should marry her. Don't, you know, just tell her you love her. You want to marry her. And they hit it off. He's very happy. He thinks she's, well, he's passed. Mm-hmm. She's still recognizable as a very special lady.
She has a new record label.
Does she?
Yeah.
That's great.
I've forgotten the name of it, but I know she's involved, still involved in
that's
the music
beautiful.
Business.
That's
yeah.
Beautiful. Great memory. Then he brought me a song called A Little Bit of Soap.
Yeah.
Which I didn't want to do because I felt like me being a religious leader and singing soul music, which wasn't really well known, I didn't want to influence my fans or my people, telling them I need to get them clean.
Yeah.
You know, like, you need a little bit of soap.
Yeah.
You know, just because I was an insult. Then he says, okay, you're turning down another hit. You're really an idiot. You turned another hit. They brought me another song called Hang on Sloopy. And I said, now you know what? I like you. You're a nice guy, but I'm not gonna sing no song with no dog, okay?
Okay. Beautiful. Fine, thank you. Hang on Sloopy. A little bit of soap. Who did that? A little bit of soap.
I don't know, but it's a great hit. Yeah, great hit. Big record.
Yeah.
So I've turned down quite a few hits.
I'll find out.
And, I brought them a song that we sang in church to raise the offering. And I just changed the lyrics to it. Brought my band in. I said, well, my band's in town. I'm bringing the band up here and let them play the song for you. Since we don't have another song. And I don't want to do this little bit of soap. I don't want to do this hang on Snoopy. So let me. Song got that called Everybody Needs Somebody. So I did Everybody Needs Somebody. Jerry Wexler says, I'll never make it. Burt Burns is too fast. Hasn't got it. Never happened. I said, you guys don't understand. This is a powerful song. It gets people moving. I said, well, the only way we can do this song is you give us part of the writers and the publishing and half of the publishing.
Did you write the song?
Yeah.
That's a great song.
It's funny. It's really funny. So I wind up giving them a piece of the writers.
Piece of the writers.
A piece of the publishing, which in those days, you know, didn't mean anything to a black artist.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know the value of publishing and writers. And when someone tells you this is the way the record will get played, you know, if we have the publisher and the writer, okay, go with it. I wanted the record out there. And today, that song has been one of the biggest songs in our catalog.
Well, that was on your last, next to last album, right?
Oh, it was on
the live album.
Yeah.
Which, by the way,
we do it live.
Before I forget, you don't happen to have any pictures with you, do you?
No, just a Polaroid picture in my pocket.
Yeah. Well, I brought my camera. I want to take a picture of you.
No, no problem with it.
But I do need. I haven't been able to get any product on you from Virgin.
Virgin?
Yeah. I called Cynthia. She was supposed to send me a couple of CDs on the one that I came in. And we remember we did the singing and everything. Never got it. And maybe it's because I'm not a cash box anymore. But they can't count out Blue Power because we're up over 100,000 now. On the new site, and well over a million on the old site.
We can't count on anybody.
No. And, I mean, that's how people are asking me now to do interviews. Mm-hmm. Like Blues News, this is for Blues News magazine Germany, in Berlin.
Beautiful.
And I know that you do work over there. And I appreciate it because
I love Germany and I want to go back real soon.
I'm trying to raise the money to buy a T3 line for my house so I can go on the air every night live.
Man, that would be beautiful. That would be beautiful.
So damn expensive, man. It's ridiculously expensive.
It's going to come down.
My wife, oh yeah, the good Lord always provides. You know. But, so anyway. How was it around Atlantic, like the studios in the early days when you first signed there? What was it like in those offices, your feeling?
It was a family.
Yeah.
It was like a family situation. I mean, you came in, everybody said hello. Everybody was concerned. They asked about the family. They wanted to see pictures of the kids. They'd walk in, I'd come in, and they'd order me pastrami and corned beef sandwiches on white with mayonnaise.
White with mayonnaise.
That was always a classic thing. With kosher pickle.
Mm-hmm.
The guy downstairs knew it was for me because nobody else would order that, right?
Yep. In those days, when you were there in the early 60s,
yeah.
Right? And you signed there, what year did you sign with Atlanta, you remember?
1960. Rick Charles had just left.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody there but the Drifters and the Coasters. Ruth Brown had just left. Big Joe Turner, I think, was still there. He was leaving.
Why would they leave?
I guess they had.
I mean, it seems to me
like everything that they wanted to receive, you know, from the label, and wanted to move on to higher heights, you know. But for me, it was a dream.
Atlanta was a dream.
Yeah.
As a kid growing up,
that red and black label.
That's it. Red and black, and the yellow and black.
Mm-hmm.
I have probably 40 or 50 78s, Atlantic 78s.
Mm-hmm.
And I played some on the show. I had a contest about a month ago, and I had 14 records on there. And I played most of them from 78s and 45s with the scratches.
You're kidding.
Nope. And I had over 5,000 people
calling
worldwide, sending me email.
Mm-hmm.
I had 300 people.
You kidding?
Out of all those people, get them right, get the contest right. There's no way I could send out a product to everybody.
It's beautiful,
you know. But you'd be surprised throughout the world how many people there are who love you, who love blues, R&B, soul music. It's staggering to me. So I keep it going, man. I'm
so grateful, man. You know, I got to tell you, my angel, Jim Byfield, mm-hmm. who signed me to Virgin Point Blank. And who had the faith and has the faith to believe in me as an artist and producer and to give my son a chance to produce and go in and project our ideas and develop our ideas without hounding us and without saying, I don't like this, or, you know, just saying, well, let's do this, try this, and very freely and openly. Spiritually, he's just been like a mentor to me, and he's just been like the greatest thing that's happened to me in many, many years. And even with his new venture now, he's constantly on that phone calling me, pushing me and urging me, we got to get this gospel album out. We're working on this gospel album. We want French television. We want so on, so on, so on. We want. And his influence and his encouragement, you know, has been just unbelievable. So this whole new album is really based upon his insight and his influence of encouraging me to go do what I want to do. Because he asked me, he says, what do you feel? I said, well, you know, I'm a church man. You know, I'd sing in church all day if you let me, mm-hmm. 7 days a week. He said, well, then go back and do your gospel album. Do it. Do what you feel. And let's get it out for 98.
Excellent.
So right now we're in the process. We're just about finishing. We should be finished, Lord's will, within the next 10 to 15 days.
Where are you recording?
We have our own private studio mm-hmm. here in L.A. And several other studios that we use. But basically, right now I'm putting on my my youth choir on 6 of the tracks. That's the last final situation.
Excellent.
So I'm going to call you. Come down. You've got to hear these
kids. I'd love it.
Yeah.
I would love it. I'd love to have something to play because I like to show where blues and R&B came from.
Yeah.
From gospel.
That's where it all comes from. Yeah.
Yeah. From
the roots.
I played Kirk Franklin and Family.
Yeah.
Played a cut.
Yeah. Great.
Why
great
We
up.
Sing.
Yeah. Great.
I have never had so much response to one song in my life.
Yeah.
People are, where can we get that? Who is that?
Yeah.
What label is it?
Yeah. Well, I certainly want to, when we get a copy of the album, I want to see if you get a copy.
Excellent.
Good.
Well,
tell us
about
it this week. I met with you.
I'm
going to
call
excited.
Cynthia
yeah.
when I get home this afternoon. Tell her that I sat down and talked to her.
Would you?
Yeah, I will. Tell her you send your love.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And my prayers and all those other good things.
Joe Medlin. One of my favorite human beings of all times.
One of the Godfathers.
Yeah. Joe Medlin was one of the nicest men I ever met. He treated me with great dignity and kindness.
So sad that we lost him.
Yes.
And Joe was an inspiration for me for many years. And matter of fact, he even worked on the definition of soul. You know, he was at home sick working on it.
Yeah.
You know, he worked on. I sent him a copy of the Blacktop Blues albums that I did,
mm-hmm.
you know, Soul of the Blues.
Yeah.
And oh, he was tickled pink about it. And then I did Live at the House of Blues. Yes, please, thank you. He just said, man, I should have been there. And, who was that woman screaming? You know, Joe. You know,
yeah.
You're one of the greatest mouths in the
yeah.
world, right? Because I'm praying for you, Joe. You know that. Praying for the Lord. Lift you up from this. But Joe Medlin. Monster of a man, beautiful man, beautiful spirit, great, great promoter.
Yeah, great record man.
He knew the business, man. He knew how to handle it. He knew how to make it work. He knew how to make it fly. Jerry Wexler would give him a record, give him a dub. He'd take that dub all over the country, man, in 3 days and have it hot. Over the weekend, you'd have a hot record.
Yeah. Well, there's another guy that could do that, too. Guy named Joe Gorkin.
We all know the Joe Gorkin story.
Yeah.
Joe Gorkin was Atlantic's man.
That's
you know?
Right.
But the Larry Maxwell, he paved the way.
Yeah.
With Dave Clark's, all those guys, you know.
Dave Clark. Dan,
Larry Maxwell,
Dan, Dave Clark would come in. I never will forget the
sharpest
first time
man
I met
in
him.
Town.
The most beautiful man.
Sharpest man.
He'd have a green suit. He had green shoes to
and
match.
A green girl.
Burt Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
From Atlanta.
Yeah.
Zenas Sears.
You're talking about the masters.
Yeah. Well, that's who I grew up with. I worked my first job as
a
promotion man.
You just a baby. You just looked
yeah, good. But Joe Galkin gave me my first shot in the music business.
I remember Joe Galkin said to me, he says, about Otis, when I tried to bring Otis to the label, he said, what is he talking about? What is that guy saying? I said, Mr. Galkin, this guy's a hit. What is it? The Sham Sham Lava Band. What is that? It's his song. Said, what is he saying? I said, not what he's saying. It's the rhythm of it. It's the feeling of it. He could never understand that song. Sham Sham Lava Band. When it was written. Yeah. I remember it was sold. How many chickens have I sold?
Yeah.
And I...